finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp met de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Frank de Boer speelt de bal aan Dennis Bergkamp. Die neemt de bal feilloos aan. En hij schiet de bal erin.
That's enough Venga Boys for today. Yeah, but you know what, that whole 90s thing that we're starting off with, I want to just point out Alex's shirt. This is very interesting. He's got a famous quote on it from the 90s, from the legend Eric Cantona himself. So the quote is, "When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea."
That's deep.
I have a confession to make. Until I was about 8, I was a Manchester United fan.
Okay, that's a pretty big confession.
This is a sad day in my life knowing this.
Everyone in my school was a United fan, and then when I got old enough to realize I lived in London,
you're a rebel.
I was like, why am I doing this?
Right.
So
right.
I switched.
You could have followed in Beckham's footsteps, you know. Londoner United fan.
That's true.
Speaking of Beckham,
yeah.
You know, the love of my life. I was reading his autobiography recently.
You mean that picture book?
His picture biography. Yes, it's a picture autobiography. It was a lot of fun, actually, to kind of just see things from his point of view. It was great. The best part was when he was talking about that Greece free kick and how he felt at the time.
Incredible.
No woman stands a chance if David Beckham is in your life.
That's true.
Yes,
that's
keep true. All your women away from David Beckham.
That's true.
Because even the men will go for him. Isn't that right, Bernie?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I'm a Cristiano boy. Through and through. I cried tears.
Oh, okay.
So many tears of joy.
That number 7 jersey got passed on from Beckham to Cristiano. You realize that, right?
That is true.
Of course. All right. Well, I'm glad we got that sorted out. good job. So we're going to start off with today's not-so-shocking result between Chelsea and United.
3-1.
3-1 it was. Do you think it was a particularly good game by both teams? Or, you know, let's start with Bernie.
I think Chelsea deserve a lot of credit for the way that they came out. They were first to every ball. There was nothing creative going on in the game. Basically, I mean, Eto put Phil Jones. It's like he sold him for nothing, basically, mm-hmm. into slavery or something like that. But it was fantastic. It was deflected, so a little lucky. The second goal, again, sloppy. Third goal, sloppy. Nothing really happened in the game, but Chelsea were the better team.
Right. I felt, you know, Man U, the first 15 minutes started off the game pretty well. They were, you know, pushing Chelsea, taking the game to them, which people weren't expecting at Stamford Bridge. But then the problem is you do the pressuring, but then there's no end result. And that's the difference. Chelsea might have not had the same quality in terms of ball possession, but then their attack seemed way more dangerous. And like Bernie said earlier, it was basically 3 shots, 3 goals.
Yeah.
Just efficient.
Man United also looked, you're right, they started off well, they started off with intent, but they looked pretty toothless up front. It was the front four of Januzaj, Young, Valencia, again, ineffective on the right,
and
Welbeck. Mm-hmm. And we saw later in the game, Welbeck was almost playing as number 10. He was coming so deep to get the ball that, you know, it didn't
work. Once again, the 18-year-old Januzaj coming up with the goods for the visitors today.
He looked their best player again.
He was the best player on the pitch for United, not saying much, honestly. But it's again, Moyes got the tactics wrong, and everyone knew it.
I just got to say, you know, off the standout performance today, I'd have to say Januzaj was one of the best players on the pitch for both teams.
Mm.
I saw him hold off David Luiz for a challenge, and I didn't think he would stay on his feet.
You brought up David Luiz. I was going to say he really impressed me in this game.
Me
he
too.
Played very well in midfield. Such a versatile player. Because I was talking to Alex during the game, saying, you know, Chelsea are going to make a lot of money out of selling Luiz, because there's always that rumor of selling Luiz, and he was saying, you know, he's too versatile to sell. He can play right back, center back, defensive mid.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you guys, does it make sense to throw, I mean, he's been fantastic, Phil Jones, but does it make sense to throw him into this game after, I don't know, was it 4 or 5 weeks that he was out, when Darren Fletcher has, you know, played more games and been consistent with the ball? Did that make any sense? It didn't make sense to me.
It's unfortunate for Fletcher. I mean, it's all, you know, I personally hate Fletcher. I hate watching him play. But you feel bad for the guy with his illness, and it's nice to see him back. So it's unfortunate for him that he gets left out. But Phil Jones is like United's joker card in big games. Mm-hmm. They put him in the middle and hope that he, you know, vacuums up all the danger. And it didn't work today.
It was like a Jones versus Luiz kind of thing. Whoever kind of controlled the midfield more with, you know, reap benefits for their team.
But you could see it, though. You could see that. And one thing Rashid and I were talking about is the Chelsea midfield swarmed them, and Jones didn't look fit. I mean, he's a good player, but he just didn't look he was up for it. And I thought maybe that was the wrong move. And the same thing with Ashley Young. He looked lethargic. This is not even Ashley Young playing bad. He just didn't look like, you know, he was fit enough. And it's, again, he came from an injury. You throw him in into a Chelsea game where fitness is going to win you the
game. Yeah, I think something about the positional roles were going on with the United players, because for the second Chelsea goal, you could see, I think it was Raphael running across the defense line, trying to go back into position. Totally uninvolved with the play, just jogging around like a headless chicken. Same thing with Phil Jones when there was a part, I think Chelsea had a shot. Hazard just ran past him. Jones could have easily put his boot in.
Well, it's
but they're just not playing their positions.
In terms of playing positions, I also thought that Moyes started with the wrong team. I thought, put Yanezai on the left, keep Kagawa as the second striker or behind the striker or whatever, like he played last game. I mean, you say bring in Jones for a big game, but talk about bringing Young for a big game.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, that's even worse.
It made no sense to me. It was completely wrong. And I feel with Moyes, you can always tell when something is wrong, when everyone in the world is telling you, do this.
Right.
Because it's not that for no reason. It worked.
True.
When you switched Kagawa, it worked.
Okay, one more point, Mo.
Those are the negatives of Man U, but we also got to look at the positives of Chelsea. Yeah. I thought Eto came in. I mean, everyone was like, what? Why is Eto starting? Blah, blah, blah. But I thought he did a good job. I mean, he's not a flash player who's going to, like, impress you over 90 minutes. But he got his goals. You create your own luck. Yes, the first goal was a huge deflection, but he took on a player, shot it with his left foot. Like, I mean, I thought he played really well
today. Yeah, job done for Chelsea today. They keep pace with the top, the three-horse title race, I think, is taking
track. 2 points away from Arsenal now.
It's going to be those three teams, and it's going to be all the way to the wire.
But there's also a fight for fourth place with Man U, Liverpool, and
I think United are way behind on that fourth spot.
Yeah, you never know.
I mean, Liverpool, Everton playing today against West Brom, so they might leapfrog Liverpool, obviously.
Yeah, they play tomorrow. And speaking of Liverpool, they, you know, I think. And I know Mohamed wants to rant about this a little bit.
I do.
Let's recap the score of the game.
Well, it ended 2-2. They went down 2-0. Then they got.
I know why.
they pulled on back right on the stroke of halftime, basically. And then, as far as I'm concerned, there was a dive from
Luis Suarez. Yeah.
You know who?
But Aston Villa in the first half were the better team by a mile. It looked like Aston Villa were competing for fourth and Liverpool were trying to stave off relegation.
Can I tell you why? I was watching the game and I could not believe the formation that Brendan Rodgers started with. I believe that first half was lost tactically 100% by Brendan Rodgers. He's very lucky they scored on the stroke of halftime.
How did they line up?
A couple of mistakes. They lined up 4-4-2. They played Gerrard and Henderson as the two center mids, Coutinho and Sterling as the two wide men, with Sturridge and Suarez. Like, I mean, it just seemed he's trying to get every single attacking player on the field, because he didn't want to drop one of Sterling or Coutinho, which he should have. And the biggest problem I have is Gerrard. Liverpool fans love Gerrard, legend, all that stuff. But he is not as good as it is made up to be. And he can play in a three-man midfield because people can cover behind him. Lucas can cover, or Henderson. But he cannot play in a two. He was just not on his game.
He was woeful, I thought.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Alex? What do you think about the change in formations for the second half?
I mean, generally, you guys know, I'm generally anti-4-4-2. But it's kind of understandable that Rodgers, you know, not to belittle your point, which is a good one, I think, Mo, but it's understandable, given how bad Villa have been playing recently, that Rodgers thought, we can go play 4-4-2 and win this game, especially with their firepower up front.
Right. I think they could have with Lucas and Henderson.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
All right, so let me ask you guys this question. Do you think Liverpool's push, you know, for a top four finish, do you think they're fading a little bit as the season wears on because of their squad depth?
I think it's just, I mean, I don't think you can make a determination over one game, because they've been really good.
Well,
really good. Sturridge has been really good over the season.
The recent run of form, they've been, you know, lost a couple of games to the big teams and now the draw at home.
I think that of all the teams in that top four chase, none of them look solid to me. All of them are going to drop points. They're all going to, you know, mess up here and there. Yeah. But I think the difference for Liverpool is they have the X factor of Suarez, and then Sturridge is playing fantastic. He's playing out of his skin right now. United have a Rooney, yes, but he's injured. And Tottenham seem to have Emmanuel Adebayor coming back.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's going to be tough, but, you know,
Well, speaking of Adebayor, I mean, he is definitely back. Scored 2 goals today.
Yeah, yep. Against Tottenham. Swansea, 3-1.
Right.
Michael Laudrup suffers yet another defeat.
I gotta say, guys, I predicted that Tottenham would play on the counter in this game. Did they line up 4-4-2 again?
Yeah,
Tim Sherwood's go-to.
They did. Eriksen finally getting his preferred position behind Adebayor. Guess who got dropped to the bench, Bernie?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Soldado.
I don't know who that is.
Apparently, Bernie's prediction for signing of the season.
I've never heard of this man. Where does he play?
He plays on the bench.
On the bench. But no, Eriksen, guys, you gotta talk about Eriksen. He played a great game. He made them tick today.
Yeah, swung in a beautiful cross for Adebayor's header, which I don't know where the defending was. I mean, Swansea have never been the league's best defenders, but Adebayor was alone at the far post. I mean, he's like 6'6". You should probably see him, you know.
I believe that's 5 wins out of 6 games for Tottenham now in the league, which that's very impressive considering they got...
Tim the Gunner is doing a good job.
Yeah. It's funny. It's ironic, isn't it?
But I also thought...
speaking of Gunners, we got to move on to Arsenal and Fulham. 2-0, what do you guys think about that?
Hold on, I'll tell you what I think, because I predicted it correctly.
Yes.
Oh, I can't.
That was a good perfect
I'm just saying, and what made it...
I think I got this one too, just for the record.
Yeah, Alex did.
Okay, you can share in the
mic. You can share in your mask and your
glory. What really entertained me about this game was not Santi Cazorla scoring 2 goals. It wasn't Arsenal struggling a little bit in the first half.
Yeah.
It was that Mohamed thought that he got the prediction right.
Yes.
And then realized that he got it wrong.
I texted Bernie midway saying, I got it, 2-0. And Bernie's like, no, I said 2-0, you said 3-0.
No.
I believe that's what they call a gaffe in England.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You're like a Spurs fan who thinks he's finished 4th on the
list.
It was all a joke.
Yeah, but that was a... I mean, the thing about Arsenal this season is that they're relying on their defense more than their attack.
Mm-hmm.
Previous seasons was, we're going to score... Previous seasons was basically like Liverpool. We're going to score more than you. And that's... I mean, I know we moved on, but that's why I think Liverpool aren't going to be as good as the others, is because the midfield and the defense aren't there. Arsenal have changed that this season. At this point last season, they were 36 points. Now they're 51. Yep. Regardless of whether they win the league or not, there is huge improvement there.
Yeah. I think what's also encouraging is that the goals are coming from everywhere.
Mm. Mm.
That's true. That's great. Okay, so now we got to talk about Man City and Cardiff. Guys, City with 103 goals in all competitions. It's the middle of January.
City are just a stat machine.
Okay, I got to point this out, that a couple of seasons ago when Barca won their treble, I think it was the first year Guardiola was coach, they scored over 100 goals that season somewhere in the second half of the season.
In La Liga.
Everyone is like, oh my God, 100 goal season. But Man City have done it. And, Premier League defenses.
Is that Man City stat in the Premier League only?
No, it's all competitions.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they'll get there in the Premiership.
But then that's...
Probably at this rate,
Roche, what you're saying is perfect in terms of what do you think about your predictions for the City Barca game?
Barca, exactly.
Because I said Barca clearly. I remember on the podcast where we talked about that. Now I'm kind of like I don't know.
Yeah. I always said if City can sort out the defense, because even the fact that Cardiff scored 2 goals against them is a little concerning, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. I mean, the way Craig Noon scored that goal.
He's a good player.
He came out of nowhere, and I thought this is a pretty neat little player. But the way that they scored those 2 goals makes me concerned for Man City going up against Barcelona. But Barcelona should be concerned as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to say, let's think back to that Craig Noon goal. He gallivants down the right wing.
I like that gallivants.
Yeah. Man City, left back.
Clichy.
Every time.
Alex hates like Clichy so much.
Remember the last time we talked about someone gallivanting past Clichy? I can't even say his name. He's useless to me. Fernando Torres.
Who also got injured today.
He played for 5 minutes and got injured.
Look, my question is, does Craig Noon gallivant past Zabaleta?
Absolutely.
Absolutely not.
Zabaleta would have taken him out.
Craig Noon for Ballon d'Or?
Absolutely.
Ballon d'Or. Mohamed, let's take it away.
Well, I mean, I wrote an article about this, and I harp on it.
I think you tried to deny writing this article.
My point is this. I have to grind my teeth and give Ronaldo his dues and say, fine, he deserves it. All I point out in the article is that it's not as black and white as people make it out to seem. That is all.
That's a fair point. I'm just happy that you had you're a man about it, and you can admit...
I will also admit that Ronaldo won for a lack of a better option.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Nor is that an admission.
I mean, that's like saying Messi wins 4 years in a row because lack of a better option. It's just a fact.
Can we...
But let's talk about it.
Right there.
Let's talk about it, because...
Before we go into it per se, can we briefly recount Pelé trying to lift up Ronaldo's son and failing miserably. I mean, have you seen anything sadder than that?
It was so awkward. The kid was barely above the podium with his chin, and he's like, what are you doing? Like, I think he tried to make him stand on the podium, and he realized he wasn't strong enough.
Guys,
like,
the pills aren't working.
No, not at all. I think he needs to go lift, bro.
He needs to lift.
Ronaldo deserved it. Messi's suit deserved the prize, too.
You gotta give an honorable mention to Frank Ribery, though. I feel like he's been shortchanged. I think, you know, off the stats, you know.
I mean, he won the media votes, like, with
he won the media votes slide. Everywhere.
Can I say something about this?
Sure. Is this about stats?
No, it's not about
okay,
stats.
Good.
It's,
okay,
it's about Frank Ribery, because people tell me, and if he won it, I could understand the case. Okay. You know, I have no problem with that. I could understand the case being made.
Right.
But Frank Ribery, for me, and this is just, maybe it's just me, maybe I'm crazy, was not the best player on Bayern Munich.
Best team player. Best player to have on your team.
No, but he was not the best Bayern Munich player by far. Like, it wasn't so obvious. He had Javi Martinez.
In terms of chances created, he was miles ahead of both Ronaldo and Messi.
But that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, I read places where people said, Manuel Neuer was even more quote-unquote important. Mm, mm. Philipp Lahm was more
Javi
important.
Javi Martinez for me.
I even thought Javi Martinez, what he did against Barcelona, maybe even Thomas Müller was even... Like, there's so many people you could make this argument that for me, that alone, the fact that you can make that argument means he can't win it.
True. Yeah, we've had so many discussions about Ballon d'Or winners in the past years. What is the criteria that decides who wins? You know, it's so ambiguous.
Can we also mention that Ibrahimovic showed up?
Yes,
even though
he had the best speech.
He was on the team of the year, wasn't he?
He almost didn't give the speech. They had to tell him, Zlatan, come back.
He had a pretty good speech. I enjoyed that.
Also offered to play for Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
We'll see what his agent has to say about
it. That's interesting.
Or all PSG.
All right, now turning to something more local over here in Toronto. We got to talk about the big signings made by Toronto FC in the past couple of weeks.
It's a bloody big deal.
It is.
How long have you been sitting on that one, Bernie?
I've been waiting for that since I saw the billboard on the road here. Yeah. It's a bloody big deal.
Yeah. All right, so we've got Jermaine Defoe signing. Yeah. We've got Michael Bradley coming from Roma. We've got Duane De Rosario, one of the best players in the MLS, coming back. And
like,
someone else today as well.
I like when you're saying that. We all of a sudden, when we're talking about TFC, we're saying Jermaine Defoe, Michael Bradley. Like, we are talking about world beaters, you know?
World beaters.
Yeah, like,
it's all relative.
It's all relative. It's all relative.
I mean, but the guy who also gets missed out, from what I've seen and heard of him, that Brazilian striker, Gilberto, apparently he's very, very good.
Right.
I don't know what that means.
He's not Gilberto Silva, is he, by any chance?
No. Well, he wasn't a striker, was he?
No. He's probably a striker for TFC. That's true.
That's true. But what annoyed me was when they had what's the coach called?
Ryan Nelson.
Ryan Nelson. They were asking him after the unveiling of Defoe and stuff, and he's going, you know what, it seemed like you signed Defoe and Gilberto at the same time. Is it because they complement each other? And he gave some random answer about, yeah, that's why we bought him. I'm like, no, he bought Defoe because he was available. Then he'll figure it out. You know what I mean?
What was also funny is, I think they were talking to, is it Tim Leiwicki or something? And he mentioned that the financial outlay for Bradley and Defoe, which is about $100 million over the course of their contract, he literally said, this is financial suicide.
Yeah, he did.
Well, which is quite an admission from the person who
admitted. I'm happy that he did, because when he came in, he said, we need to fix not just soccer, but sports in Toronto, in the city. And he's doing what a lot of the other teams did, just throw money at it and see what happens. And as far as I'm concerned, it's an absolute... No other team that I can think of in MLS has done so many deals in such a short amount of time to change everything. So this is the biggest thing I think MLS has seen ever.
Not like
besides Beckham coming through.
It's not like,
this is the biggest.
Not like TFC is going to become the Man City of the MLS anytime soon.
Well, I mean, they have something for Man City. They got Drake on their side.
Oh, yeah, the unbeatable Drake.
Yeah.
We can't even line up
we're starting from the bottom.
And now
we're going from Union to Jane and Finch.
Yes.
Okay, guys. We got to move back to Europe.
Yep.
We're going to talk about Messi's comeback with Barcelona. They're playing right now.
Yeah. Let's check the scores while we talk.
It was 1-1 at the last update, but Messi,
four goals in the last three games. I mean, he came back, played 20 minutes in his first comeback game. Boom, boom, two goals. One of them was very Messi-esque. I enjoyed watching that a lot. And then second game was a drab, the Atletico Barcelona. It was completely, boring. Nothing happened.
Tactics spot on by
Simeone. They played a 0-0 draw. I mean, obviously very beneficial for Real. And then the third game where they played the second leg in the cup, Messi scored a beautiful goal against Getafe again.
I got to say, that title race over there is heating up now, because Madrid, within 3 points, everyone's... Everyone's on 50 points right now. Madrid have obviously played an extra game.
Pending the
But it's exciting in the game right now because it's the 87th minute and it's still 1-1. I expect a Messi goal in the 90th minute.
This is Barca Levante?
Yeah, Barca Levante. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I mean, we'll update you guys in 3 minutes, I guess.
anyone want to comment on the golazos by Real Madrid against Betis?
You know what? What were they doing? Was that training for them? Because it felt like
they were last. In the Betis are last, aren't they?
But, like, I mean, I know they're last, but they're professional footballers.
Even the goalkeeper just had his hand up and is going, like, what am I supposed to do?
The first two, he didn't move. I thought, you should fire this man.
we're being a bit harsh over there, because there was no chance.
There was no chance.
But Brady just wants a bit of an effort, like, kind of maybe a dive.
Just a dive. Actually, here's a general question. When you watch a goal, right, especially like one of those blasts, if you were a player, would you prefer the goalie dove and then it's like, you almost got it, but you didn't? Or they stand, does it make it seem like less of a good goal because they just stood there and didn't move?
I think the admission of the goalkeeper that he had no chance is quite a compliment.
Yeah, I agree.
He dove for the demon,
point that his huge muscles when he scored that goal, as he usually does.
I know Richey would have been ecstatic. We wouldn't be
Ronaldo
here
lifts.
Today.
Ronaldo and Bale, that whole team, they lift. I mean, the goalkeeper dove for the Di Maria goal, didn't he?
Yeah. The daisy cutter.
Yeah. The grass skimmer, the carpet.
I guess the more important question is, are they finding their stride now?
No.
Is that happening?
Modric is finding his stride.
Modric, to me, is the most important player on the team over 90 minutes. For sure. I mean, obviously, in my opinion. But.
We were talking about it earlier, and it's important. He's the one guy in that team, one of a couple, that isn't totally selfish.
Right.
Like, we saw him get into the box for, I think it was Benzema's goal,
right.
And he beat two players, and he's in a position to shoot, but instead he lays it off. Whereas most of the attacking players in that team, they're taking that chance.
Speaking of Benzema, I think he scored his 100th Real Madrid goal.
Yeah. How long did that take him?
Wow.
Guys, Benzema's not as bad as you guys make him sound.
I'm sorry, he's horrible.
He has an excellent beard.
Oh my goodness. But, what happened to your love, Isco?
I don't know.
I haven't seen him in a while.
He's not around. I mean,
I do remember Mo saying that he would be the best player in La Liga this season.
Yes.
I'm not the only one that makes mistakes.
Is it too early to say that there's panic at the Isco?
He went there.
Not bad, guys.
We're forgetting about the Ronaldo assist at the end of that game. Clearly unintentional. He got all the credit.
Got all the credit. Everybody's like celebrating with Ronaldo.
It was
and, like,
a high school kick. He tried to score, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Who did it fall to?
Morata.
I'm just surprised he didn't cry after that. You know, tears of joy.
What's happening with any updates on the Barca game?
Oh, let's see. In the meantime, I think we got some Serie A.
Clarence Seedorf recently retiring and now taking over from Massimiliano.
Well, recently retiring is another statement.
Yeah.
He retired for the job.
He retired, exactly, yeah. Seedorf at Milan, what do you think about that?
It's an interesting appointment. Allegedly, Barbara Berlusconi had this plan for a while, like almost into last season, but Allegri did better last season than was expected. And given they sold all the players under his feet. But this season they've struggled. I mean, we talked about it earlier. I think earlier in the season when we did a podcast, they were in the relegation zone.
Yeah.
And now they're, mid-table.
Mid-seed.
But a change was necessary. I think that's fair. Seedorf, no experience. I mean, he's a smart guy. We've seen him out-pundit many other pundits, but questions have to be asked.
Very important technical question. I thought you needed coaching badges to be a coach. Or can I become a manager?
There's like special dispensation you can get.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's like when Arsenal signed Rio Maichi. You get like a special permit.
Because so you don't need your coaching badges to be a coach.
I mean, technically, you have to be working towards them. Mm. I don't think it's actually that you need to have them; it's that you can working towards them.
Seedorf has no experience.
Well, I think what they've said is like they've given up on this season. Basically, they want Seedorf to get some games in so that he comes in fresh for next season, and in the meantime, he'll do his coaching
badges. Berlusconi said there's no money to spend, and I think not a lot of coaches would have taken the job without money to spend in general.
It's another Tim Sherwood appointment. They want someone that they can control. Maybe play 4-4-2, maybe not. But that's all they want, because as a coach, I don't think you can compare Allegri and Seedorf.
No.
The issue was Allegri, a lot of players are having issues with him.
Mm-hmm.
People say he's very arrogant, very pompous kind of guy, and moves away from the players,
right.
Which maybe is why they didn't bring in AVB, because he's the same person.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But Seedorf is a puppet, and he's a puppet for the Berlusconi family, because he'll do whatever they tell him to do.
So it's more like a flair kind of signing than a adequate sense, more like Flair. Oh, he's a, you know, a Milan legend.
It's
and
a
all
Milan legend marketing job, basically. But on the other half, the other, I mean, the top half of the table, we got Juve potentially running away with it with their dynamic duo.
Yeah, they won 4-2 either today or yesterday in the league. And that, again, Bernie wants to harp on about Pogba. Alex wants to harp on about Vidal. And you know what? You guys have every right, because Vidal is a defensive mid who has 9 goals so far.
Yep.
I'm not going to harp on about it because I've done it too much and it hurts my soul.
I think Buffon did all the talking for us when he recently said that when he saw Pogba in the fourth training session, when he was still a stranger, he thought, are people at Manchester United blind? Bernie.
I mean, I wear glasses. Trust me, they are blind. They really are blind. But moving on from that, I mean, the thing about Juventus that I like is that in every position, there's almost like, it's class.
Yeah, it's a squad.
For every reason, they don't move it on to Europe, but that's fine. Because the guys falling behind them in Serie A, they're getting there, but they're not ready.
Right.
Juve has been doing this for years. It's been a slow, steady process. And this is the thing I want to harp on about for a lot of teams in England, is that Juventus built a team, a great team, around a core of good players, not necessarily world-class players. But they fit the system, they fit a mold, they fit a plan, and they're pretty good.
And they were very successful with their signings. I mean, yeah, you need a bit of luck that every signing you make was wonderful, but, I mean, that's a credit to them. But also, you got to keep in mind, they got relegated to Serie B.
It was the Calciopoli that has instilled this new Juve that we're seeing
right now. It just goes to show, and I'm not going to say any names, but it goes to show that you can rebuild something slowly, patiently, without spending Man City money, and I won't name who.
All right. Well, speaking of Serie A, there's Roma. There's Roma and Napoli behind Juve. Napoli drew 2-2 in the last second. They were winning 2-1. That was a shame.
But how about your boy Gervinho?
My boy Gervinho.
Incredible assist. I mean, it takes talent to
Everybody needs to YouTube that right now.
So let's just briefly describe this. So a cross comes in from the right hand side. Gervinho has an open goal. And he attempted to backheel the ball.
In midair.
The ball virtually went through his legs. I mean, he there was contact, but the ball kept going sideways and luckily fell to another Roma player to convert.
When you said there was contact there, it reminded me that we didn't really discuss the Suarez quote unquote dive. Quick roundup. What do you guys think?
Dive.
Moving on.
Yeah. and just so we know, Levante and Barcelona ended 1-1.
Oh,
which
blows
this title race.
Yeah.
Wide.
So Barca are one. So wait, Atletico is top of the league if they win?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that is exciting. La Liga has never been this exciting in a long time.
Title race is everywhere heating up.
I'm loving it. I'm finally loving that there's a third team in La Liga that can upset the balance.
And I mean, speaking of title races, Bayern did lose 3-0.
It was a friendly, and Guardiola claims he claims it was like an experimentation. They were playing three at the back, and then an extra man in midfield. Guardiola,
half of them were on LSD.
Guardiola, why are you playing so many men in the midfield? You already have 70% possession.
What's
your problem?
You're bored. You're literally bored. You're like, I want to change things up. As a coach, you're like, sometimes coaches want to change things up because they're like, I just want to do something.
But they already have three different styles of playing. Yeah. They have a plan A, B, and C. Yeah. So, like, what are you trying to
do?
Plan D includes Guardiola himself playing.
Might as well go and play.
Clips of him in training. He looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Well,
he looks
pretty good.
He was a good player in his
game.
He was a good player.
We're what? Two-thirds through January.
Mm-hmm.
The transfer window has been open.
Mm-hmm.
And we can run through some of the news. I mean, I think, Bernie, you're going to have an article about this up on the blog in a couple of weeks, just rounding up the transfer news. But so far in the Premiership, we've had some deals. Nothing too spectacular. Okay, all right, let's start there, Rashid. Kevin De Bruyne, Chelsea signed him for $7 million a couple years ago. Don't play him. I don't think he played one competitive game. He was out on the
barely. Yep.
He played one against Hull opening day, actually.
Oh, yeah?
That was it.
Okay.
And then when you blasted him in the press and never played again.
Right. Yeah. And then sell him to Wolfsburg for how much?
18 million.
So what's the net there? 11 million?
I have two questions. A, how does his stock rise when he's not playing?
Yeah.
And B, where did Wolfsburg get 18 million?
That is true. I think it's financed. I doubt.
I think Bayern Munich gave them some money.
Well, Bayern Munich is like giving clubs around the money.
Wolfsburg are owned by Volkswagen, no?
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, the sales were higher this year?
Maybe. But, I mean, that's $11 million in net, which they automatically lost because they sold Mattis for $3 million and bought him back for $25 million.
Oh.
Like,
it's
wow.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. But here's the thing. De Bruyne, I think, is a good player. I mean, I've seen very little of him, but every time I've seen him play, I liked him.
$18 million, good player?
Come on now. But, and Matic, maybe $20 million. It's, people are saying that it's a bit of a bargain.
Right.
If it wasn't Chelsea bought him, that is. Because then, I mean, they just lost money, basically.
So Chelsea with the biggest moves.
All right, and we also got Jalovic and Shane Long going to Hull City. The Tigers.
I am enjoying what Bruce... what's his name?
Steve Bruce.
Because I went his last name thinking there was still a last name. Steve Bruce is doing at Hull. I'm really enjoying it.
Sorry to interrupt you there. I have a funny story about Steve Bruce. So I was reading the Alex Ferguson autobiography, and he was talking about Schmeichel. There was a section about Schmeichel, who was one of my favorite players as a kid. And he said that Schmeichel would often come out of his goal shouting and bawling at Bruce and Pallister, and Bruce would turn around and say, "Get back in your goal, you big German tart." Schmeichel would get all pissed off because he's not actually German. Yeah.
But he looks German.
And what I think, I mean, it's been a very boring transfer window for me. Maybe the last day gets interesting. But the best story I heard is actually from Everton, and it's not Aidan McGeady.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about that.
Right.
It's that
they rescued him from a gulag.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So he's probably happy he's not anywhere near Russia right now.
Right.
But it's the fact that Everton stole Lassine Traore from West Ham.
I mean,
that happened.
He was caught shopping in, like, Tesco or in Liverpool, yeah.
So, literally what happened is, you heard the story, Monaco signed him from Anzhi, and then they immediately agreed a loan deal with West Ham. Now, what happened was, Everton came in and said, "This hasn't been signed yet, or official, how about you come to us?"
Oh.
And they agreed the deal. Monaco said, "Sure, take your pick." And he picked Everton.
From West Ham, right?
So, no, he agreed with...
No, but they stole him.
Yeah, they stole him, basically, from West Ham.
I think Allardyce came out saying the deal was hijacked by Everton. Like,
yeah, he is now on Everton's books for the rest of the season.
So, I mean, A, good signing for Everton, back up to Lukaku.
Yeah, another good signing for Everton.
Because they lost Jalovic, right? Makes sense.
And B, could Sam Allardyce's life get any worse?
What was his tactics board? It was a 4-4-2 long ball to the big man.
Oh, he had Carlton Cole and Andy Carroll up front the other
day. I think
it's
more of a 9-1.
How was that missed by Andy Carroll?
They both missed it.
Oh, yeah.
Open goal volley.
Alex, any other...
So other deals. Jonas Gutierrez has gone to Norwich on loan. Houghton worked with him before.
Sure.
Not a big deal. Stephen Ireland has gone to Stoke to work with his parole officer, Mark Hughes.
All right.
Or social worker or something. I don't know. I feel like Mark Hughes has to take
care of him. I think he has one of those ankle things where he can't stay away from Mark Hughes for long enough.
Isn't Jermaine Pennant also at Stoke?
Yeah.
And he had that too. Oh,
yeah.
Criminals.
Yeah. It's like starts beeping when Mark Hughes goes.
Aston Villa, Lambert has signed Grant Holt.
Again, everybody's signing people that they know or they've worked with. Like,
yeah,
I mean, what are
they
missing?
He's
not bad.
Okay.
He's not bad.
He
looked
alright.
What else?
Brian Ruiz has left Fulham on loan, and the one that I'm actually quite excited to see is Guidetti leaving Man City on loan for Stoke.
If he doesn't get injured.
He doesn't get injured.
But he's supposed to be really good.
Well, supposed to be good. I mean, City can say that all they want to raise his price, but until we see it.
I mean, he did score, was it like 18 goals in 19 games at Feyenoord or some ridiculous statistic like that?
I know. We still got a week for January to go, and I think it's going to be very exciting. I doubt big teams are going to make big signings, but you never know. Loan, maybe good loan signings.
Yeah, could be interesting how the transfer market turns out. So we'll obviously recap that on our next podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, you guys stay cool, and don't forget to follow us on iTunes on our website, underthekoshblog.com.
Twitter, at _thekosh.
Right. And okay. Facebook, underthekoshblog.
And follow our predictions because I'm still winning.
All right,
Roche's making a comeback.
That doesn't matter to me. I'm winning.
All right, guys. Cheers.
Roberto Carlos. This is Clarence Seedorf. Options to his right and left. Oh, he's gone for goal! Fabulous strike from Clarence Seedorf. Ferociously struck and completely deceiving the goalkeeper, who could hardly have been expecting a shot from that sort of distance.